यास्यारते राग देशो व्यवस्थितो तयोरनावशाम आगच्छेत् तो ह्यस्य परिपंचनाः. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. The third chapter of Sri Bhagavad Gita, wherein Lord Sri Krishna is explaining the great importance of regulating our lives. In this world, which is a place of duality, there is attachment, which our mind and senses develop for those things which give us pleasure. And there is aversion to those objects of material existence which cause us distress. And we spend our whole life trying to develop deeper attachments to the sources of pleasure and trying to somehow or other by any means escape causes of distress. So in this way, the spirit soul, which is part and parcel of Krishna, spends its valuable, most precious facility within this human form of life simply in the consciousness of attachment and aversion. And Krishna here explains that both attachment and aversion to anything temporary that is not connected to Krishna is a great stumbling block on the path of self-realization. Srila Prabhupada would very often mark the defect in many of the Swamis and Yogis, Maharishis, that came to the West. They would sometimes teach a form of meditation or teach a particular process of pranayama, asana. And they would say that you just do like this and after some time you will become realized that you are God. That you will achieve everlasting peace in that state. And of course, hundreds and thousands of people were lining up and paying their hard-earned money to buy their mantras from these yogis. Why? Srila Prabhupada said, if you give something cheap, many people will come. But if you want to give the real thing, only those who are very sincere. If you sell broken glass, or if you sell glass jewelry, he said, so many quantities of people will come to buy it. But if you sell a rare diamond, only those who are willing to pay the price will come. So the Prabhupada explained that according to Krishna's teachings in Gita, there is no question of yoga without regulating the mind and senses, without following principles of discipline. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada taught us the true message of Krishna, how to keep our mind and senses always engaged in positive spiritual activities, and simultaneously to refrain from indulging in any of the attachments or aversions the objects which create those experiences in this world. In fact, a devotee is willing to accept even the most adverse conditions if it is favorable to the service of Guru and Krishna. And a devotee is willing to give up forever, without a second thought, even what we are most attached to, if it is an impediment in the service of our Guru and Krishna. And this process is called bhakti, that we live for the pleasure of the Lord. And when we accept this principle in our life, then naturally everything else falls in its proper place. When we are seeking our own pleasure, everything will go wrong, because the pleasures of this world ultimately create confusion and bondage. But when we think in terms of the pleasure of Krishna, through the service under the direction of the Guru and the Acharyas, then whatever we do, we can have complete faith that it is purifying, liberating us from all attractions and all aversions. And there are many great examples of this. How great devotees in the service of Guru and Krishna are willing to accept or reject anything for the pleasure of the Lord. Srila Rupa Goswami made a very simple statement that we should accept what is favorable for the discharge of devotional service, and we should reject whatever is unfavorable. It is quite simple to understand, but it is quite difficult to practice, because we have so many attachments and so many aversions. Today is the appearance day of Srila Ramanuja Acharya. And how he taught us in his own life and through the lives of his disciples, how we should be willing to accept anything or reject anything for the service of Guru and Krishna. One time, a very pious and humble Brahman approached Sri Ramanujacharya, and with very deep sincerity, he requested, "I want to accept you as my Guru Maharaj. I want to stay with you, and I want to serve you. I want to give my life to serving you and pleasing you. Please instruct me." And Ramanujacharya replied that, "Yes, I will instruct you. You do whatever I tell you to do without question." The Brahmin said, "I give my word. I will do whatever you tell me to do without question." So then Ramanujacharya became very happy. He said, "According to the Shastra, the greatest purification is to take the water that has washed the feet of a humble Brahman. So my instruction to you is every day you wash your feet and you give me the water to drink and sprinkle on my head." So this Brahman, he was very simple. He understood, this is my guru's instruction. So every day he would wash his feet, and he would personally deliver that water to Ramanujacharya, and he would sprinkle it upon his head. And one day, Ramanujacharya, he went to one of his Grihastha disciples' homes. They offered him nice prasad of Bhagwan, and then he began to preach. And immersed in Harikatha, the whole day disappeared. And soon it was late at night, And he came back to his ashram, and this Brahman was still awake, even though it was way, way into the night. And Ramanujacharya said, "Why are you still awake? Have you eaten your prasad today?" He said, "No." He said, "You have not eaten all day?" He said, "No." "And you're staying up so late at night? Why?" He said, "Because you haven't drunk the water that washed my feet yet. I've been waiting for you all day to give it to you. I cannot eat or sleep without fulfilling my service to you." So then Ramanujacharya very blissfully took the water and sprinkled it on his head. And then the Brahmin peacefully took prasad and took rest. Ramanujacharya was so happy just to, not only to get the water from his feet, but just to see such simplicity, such humility. Obviously, it was a great embarrassment to him. In fact, it is said that you can even go to hell for doing such a thing. But he wasn't concerned with heaven or hell. He wasn't concerned with the shame and the embarrassment. He was only concerned with pleasing his guru. "This pleases you? What concern do I have for anything else?" Of course, Ramanujacharya in his own life, he made a very transcendental pastime. He went for initiation to one great acharya. His name was Gostipurna. And his own initiating Guru Maharaj, Mahapurna, told him he should receive mantra from this Gostipurna. He said, "There is no acharya Vaishnav like him." So he said, "Can you please give me the mantra?" And Gostipurna was thinking that this mantra is so pure that I have no inclination to give it to anyone in this world, because if it touches the lips of someone impure, it is not pleasing for this, the holy name of the Lord. So he said, "Maybe some other day. Now you can return to your home." So Ramanujacharya felt very much dejected. And some days later, he walked all the way from Srirangam to this particular village, and he said, "Now will you give me initiation in the mantra?" And he said, "No, I will not give you the initiation at this time." Ramanujacharya went 18 times, walking long distance, very humbly falling at his feet, asking if it would please him to give him this initiation. And 18 times he refused. Ramanujacharya, thinking himself so undeserving, so fallen, so useless in his existence, in such humility he began to cry. And one Vaishnav told Gostipurna how Ramanujacharya, his heart was so broken in humility, feeling himself so undeserving, he was simply weeping. So Gostipurna called for him. Sri Ramanujacharya approached, and he was told that this mantra, my son, is so pure and it is so powerful that anyone who hears it will be liberated from the sufferings of this world and achieve the eternal loving service of Lord Narayan. He said, "Therefore, I am entrusting this mantra to you under the condition that you never, ever, ever disclose this to anyone else." And then he gave him the mantra. And Ramanuja was very much blissful. He offered his prostrated obeisances to his Guru Maharaj, and he began to walk back to his home, his ashram. As he was walking, he saw so many people. And as he was looking at them, seeing how they were trying to enjoy the material world, simply cast into this ocean of duality, simply responding to various attachments and aversions, and being incriminated deeper and deeper and deeper in the laws of karma. And a great devotee feels compassion, not only to the poor and to the sick and to the old, but a devotee feels compassion upon anyone who is wasting their human life without Krishna consciousness. So upon seeing these people, his heart was just swelling over with pity and sympathy for them. So he announced very loudly that everyone come to the local temple. Get everyone to come, because I am going to give freely a most precious jewel to each and every one. So this spread throughout the village, and soon there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people gathered at the temple. And Ramanujacharya climbed to the top of the temple where everyone could see him. He was on the terrace. And he said to them that you are all more dear to me than my very life. Therefore, I am going to give you the most precious wealth. I am going to give you a mantra by which chanting you would be free from the clutches of material suffering and you will achieve the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. So all the people were calling out, please give us this mantra. So Ramanujacharya, he said, everyone, please repeat after me. And then, as loud as he could sing, he called out for everyone to hear the secret mantra. Everyone repeat after me. Om Namo Narayanaya.
Om Namo Narayanaya.
Everyone was chanting very loud. Repeat again, Ramanuja said. Om Namo Narayanaya.
Om Namo Narayanaya.
Om Namo Narayanaya.
Om Namo Narayanaya.
He instructed them how to chant in a mood of service. And everyone was feeling great bliss. And they all, with grateful hearts, offered their obeisances to Sri Ramanujacharya. And then Ramanuja happily went back to his guru's ashram. Meanwhile, Gostipurna heard the news of this tumultuous sound of thousands and thousands and thousands of people chanting the mantra that he did not feel any button but Ramanuja in the whole world was qualified to sing. And when Ramanuja came in, very humble, offered his dandavat pranam, and his guru was furious. He said, get out of here. Why you are causing me such great suffering to see your face? You are a fool. You are a rascal. You have disobeyed my order. Get out of here. He said, for committing this offense, you will have to spend lifetimes in hell. And Ramanujacharya, in great happiness and humility, in folded palms, he spoke and said, the Guru Maharaj, you have told me that anyone who hears this mantra will get liberation from suffering and achieve the loving service of Lord Narayan. So why not give liberation and Narayan bhakti to everyone? Why should they suffer in this world? If all these thousands and thousands of people go back to Vaikuntha, for their sake, I am willing to suffer in hell for lifetimes. Paradukaduki, a real Vaishnava, his suffering is to see the sufferings of others. When Gostipurna heard this, the compassion and the selfless devotion of Ramanuja, he began to weep. With his own arms, he embraced Ramanujacharya. And he said that from this day, you are my guru. You are teaching me the true qualities of a devotee, compassion and selfless devotion. And Ramanujacharya fell at the feet of Gostipurna, and he said, no, I am your eternal servant, servant of your servants. And it is only by your grace, by your mercy, that all these people have been delivered. So in this way, Ramanujacharya, he was actually willing to go to hell. He was willing to suffer endlessly, commit any offenses, if it would help others to achieve Krishna consciousness. And actually, Ramanujacharya knew the heart of his spiritual master. And therefore, he was willing to put aside all attractions and aversions to serve the real heart of his Guru Maharaj. Ramanuja had another disciple. His name was Kuresh. Kuresh was actually a very, very wealthy man. And he was so pious that in his house, he was always, all poor people, all sick people, he was always just giving them everything they wanted. From early morning till late night, his doors were open for anyone to come and he would just give them whatever he could. He was a married man, grihasta, with children, two children. And he became a disciple of Ramanujacharya. He was such a faithful, loyal disciple. He was so empowered by the Lord due to his devotion to his guru. At that time, the Mayavadi system was very prominent in India. Generally, Mayavadis, their misconception is that ultimately, God is a formless state of existence. It is covered Buddhism. Lord Buddha taught that form, personality, qualities, they are all products of illusion called Maya. And when we, through concentration, meditation, morality, charity, gradually we become purified of all the contaminations of attachments and aversions to this world. And then our consciousness actually ceases to exist, because consciousness is an illusion. Everything is an illusion. So we merge into the nirvishesh, sunyavad, which means void. We enter into a state of emptiness or nothingness. And that is the ultimate bliss, because in emptiness there is no misery, no desire. So Sripad Shankaracharya took the exact teachings of Buddha and he just added the name Brahman, made it sound like something positive, and he defeated all the Buddhisms and drove them out of India completely. But the conclusion was the same. A Brahman, a god who is formless, without any qualities, without any personality, there is no soul, there is no differentiation on any level, spiritual or material. So ultimately he was explaining the void, but he was giving it a Shastric name. In this way he reestablished the Vedas. So Ramanujacharya was the first Acharya after Sripad Shankar to very, very strongly, systematically establish the mistakes in the Mayavad philosophy and explain how the soul, the Jivatma, is eternally dependent and subordinate to the Paramatma, or the Supreme God. And both Narayan or Krishna is eternal, and the Jivatma, you and me, our souls are eternal. And we are eternally dependent on the Lord, who has diversified energies. And according to our free will, we either are completely controlled by his material energy called Maya, Shakti, or we are completely controlled by his spiritual energy, which is Bhakti, Daivi Shakti. So he was teaching the principle that Krishna or Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His form is eternal. His personality is eternal. His pastimes are eternal. His names are eternal. They are not just means of going to something beyond. They are the Absolute. And the absolute highest realization is to engage in the loving pastimes of the Lord in Vaikuntha. And Ramanujacharya preached so powerfully, so purely, that no Mayavadi could stand before him. They either had to do one of two things. They either had to surrender to him and be his disciple, which many of them did, or they had to run and hide from him. He debated so many. So there was a king. And this king, he was influenced by the Mayavad philosophy. And his idea is that Shiva is the supreme god in this world. And ultimately, by worshipping Shiva, you merge into the impersonal Brahman. And he wanted to convert the whole kingdom to worship Shiva as supreme. But one of his ministers told him that the only way you'll be successful is we have to defeat Ramanujacharya. We should invite him here to Kanchipuram. We should challenge him to debate, and we will defeat him. And if he is defeated, because he is the greatest of the Vaishnavas, all Vaishnavas will accept our version. And if we do not defeat him, we will kill him, murder him. And when people see that such a great devotee of Vishnu has been murdered, they'll have to accept that Shiva is supreme. Hariwo. So the king was very happy to hear this. Yes, we will bring him here, we will defeat him or murder him. So the king sent some messengers to Sri Rangam, where Ramanujacharya was staying, and asked that the king is requesting you to come to have nice audience. He wants to have audience with you. We will have nice debate also. So Ramanujacharya said, yes, certainly, I will come. So he started preparing everything to come. But this one devotee, Kuresh, his Grihastha disciple, he said, Ramanujacharya, Guru Maharaj, said, you should not go. I do not trust this king. He is very evil and very sectarian. I believe he will kill you if you go. Actually, the king ordered that Ramanuja and his guru, Mahapurna, that they both go. So Kuresh said that, let me go. Let me have the honor of giving my life for my Guru Maharaj. And meanwhile, the guards were there from the king. So Kuresh, he took off his white clothes of a Grihastha, and Ramanuja, his guru, put on Grihastha robes, and he took Ramanuja's clothes as a sannyasi. And in this way, Ramanuja, with some of his followers, easily left the kingdom without being detected. I mean, left the city of Srirangam. And Quraysh was brought before the king. Everyone was thinking, he is Ramanujacharya. So at that time, he and Mahapurna were challenged by the king. Either you accept, actually what he said is, what is the goal of life? And Quraysh said, the goal of life is unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan. And the king couldn't tolerate hearing that. He just became so angry. He said, this is nonsense, this is bogus, you are cheating people, you are misleading people. And then he brought all of his highest pundits, and he told the pundits, you defeat them. So the pundits started presenting so many arguments, and Quraysh and Mahapurna were just easily, effortlessly tearing them to pieces. The Vaishnava philosophy is so powerful. Why? Because it is based on truth. And there is no greater power in all the creation than truth. Even Srila Prabhupada, he told us that you just understand the simple instructions that I have given you, and you can defeat anyone because it is true. And it was amazing. When Srila Prabhupada first came to the West, he just gave some basic teachings. He just had just a few little books. Devotees heard a few little lectures. He sent them out to preach. And just by hearing the basic principles of Prabhupada's teachings, they were undefeatable. Devotees who had only been hearing from him for a few months, after just one or two years of being his students, he sent some of them to the southern parts of India, and they were defeating the Shankaracharyas and their disciples. They couldn't be defeated. Because Vaishnava philosophy is based on truth. And truth is the greatest power. So Quraysh annihilated all the arguments so effortlessly that he made a complete joke out of all the pundits. So the king was infuriated and he said, I will kill you. But when Ramanujacharya, many years before, was young, this king, when he was a boy of only 8 years old, his sister was haunted by a ghost, and she was terribly being suffering like anything. And so many mystics and so many sadhus and so many astrologers and so many exorcists and so many swami, everyone was coming. And the ghost would just laugh at them all through this voice of this girl. He would just laugh at them all. Ah. Run away. They didn't know what to do. Yadava Prakash, the teacher of Ramanuja, he was just a boy. Even he, the ghost, laughed at. He had to run away. But Ramanujacharya, when he came forward, he was so pure, such a great Vaishnava, that the ghost actually, through the small girl, actually bowed down and touched his lotus feet. He said, if you put your feet on my head, then I will go away. So Ramanuja, just all he did is place his feet on the head. And just to show that the ghost was gone, he said, I will leave this little girl and I will go to the top branch of the tree and break it. And then the girl was normal. So the king was obliged. How could he kill someone who had done such a nice favor for him? So he decided he would torture him, beat him, and poke out his eyes. So the king and Quraysh was so happy when he heard the sentence that he was going to be beat. He was thinking, such a nice seva I get to do for my Guru Maharaj. And the servants of the king severely tortured them. In so many ways, they just caused pain to them, just to the point of death without killing them. And then the culmination of their tortures was they burned out their eyes, both Quraysh and Mahapurna. And after they were beaten, whipped, tortured, and their eyes were burned out, Quraysh very blissfully looked at the torturers and thanked them. He said, "I am very much indebted to you, because by your kindness you have allowed me to perform this wonderful service to my spiritual master of giving up my eyes and enduring so much pain. So thank you very much. I am indebted to you. How can I serve you?" And when the torturers heard this, their hearts melted. Such a saint, such a devotee. So even they started feeling, what have we done? So the torturers found someone, gave them some money because they were blind, and said, "Please take these two people back to Sri Rangam." So on the way, Mahapurna just laid down. He was an old man. He said that, you know, what he had just gone through with his frail body, he could no longer live. So he said, I have no more seva in this material world. Please offer my obeisances to Sri Ramanujacharya." And with the thought of Narayan in his heart and the name of Narayan on his lips, he went back to Vaikuntha. Meanwhile, Quraysh was in Sri Rangam, and for some time he was living completely blind. For quite a while, when Ramanujacharya had heard what he endured for his sake, he began to weep in ecstatic love to see such a disciple as this. Ramanujacharya later on came to Sri Rangam, and he told Quraysh with great affection and love, he said, you should go to Kanchipuram. You know what happened during this time? Because of the king's offense, he contracted a terrible, terrible disease. He suffered horribly and he died. And then the son of the king, he became a disciple of Ramanujacharya. And he taught all of the kingdom to chant the names of Krishna and become Vaishnavas. So by this time, everything was quite safe. So he told Quraysh that you should go to the temple. It is called the temple of Bharadvaj. And you should pray to Bharadvaj to give you your sight back. And I promise that if you make this prayer, he will give you back the sight of your eyes. So on Ramanuja's order, he went to the deity of Lord Narayan. And he was such a pure person that the Lord actually spoke to him. He said, "What boon do you want?" And Quraysh said, "Only one boon I want. That the minister..." Actually, this is an interesting situation. The minister who actually told the king how dangerous Ramanuj was, and the one who actually arranged for his torture and his eyes to be poked out, that minister used to be one of Ramanuja's disciples, but he blooped and turned against him. So it was because of this person that Quraysh had to suffer so bitterly. So when Lord Narayan asked Quraysh, "Ask for your boon," he said, "The boon I ask is that this minister of the king, that he be forgiven for all of his offenses, and that you give him bhakti, you give him pure devotional service." So Varadraj said, yes, that will be done. It is done. Now you ask for something else. Isn't there something else you want to ask me? He said, yes, that the king, who has already left his body due to his grievous offenses, that king be forgiven for everything he has ever done to me or anyone else, and he be given Krishna bhakti. So Bharadvaj said, yes, he will be forgiven and he will be given bhakti. That's all? Anything else? Goraish said, that's all. And then he left. Meanwhile, Ramanuja, he saw that Koresh was still blind. He said, he was overwhelmed with joy because he understood, what boons did you ask for? He asked not for his own sight back, but only the forgiveness of the people who blinded him. So Ramanuja understood the selfless nature of his disciple, that he would never, ever, ever ask anything for himself. Compare Koresh to the common worshippers of the demigods here in India. Give me wealth, give me health, give me wife, give me husband, give me victory, give me success, give me so many things. Give me good grades on my exams. When you're a sadhu, or at least trying to be a sadhu, you really hear what everybody wants. When we go to these big public programs, so many people come, Swamiji, please give me the boon that I will get good grades. Please give me the boon that my business will be successful. Please give me the boon that this pain in my left arm goes away. Right, Devamrit? You get these requests too? Shamanand? Radha Gopina? Govinda? People ask these things? Gauranga? So many things. Please give me the boon that I can digest my food better. Please give me the boon that I can pass stool in regulation every day. This is the types of requests we get. Literally. This is what they approach God for. That's what they're asking us, what to speak when they go to the temples of the devatas. And they're spending money doing pujas. And as they're doing pujas, there's tears in their eyes and they're trembling. And this is what they're asking. Give me more money. Make my business a success. Make India win the cricket match. I wonder how many people of this great land of Bharatvarsha prayed to the devatas on that day that India wins the cricket match. The demigods were probably getting hundreds of millions of requests like this. And then they won. And then they lost. Haribo. Anyways, even though Ramanuja personally asked Koresh, asked Lord Narayan for your eyes back, he couldn't do it. To ask anything for himself, he couldn't do it. He was only asking for the benediction that would be beneficial for others. He asked that his enemies go back to Vaikuntha. So Ramanuja said to Koresh that you have surrendered your life to me. Therefore, every part of your body is my property. Nothing is yours. Whatever you have is to be utilized in my service. Those eyes are not your eyes. They're my eyes. They're to be utilized in my service. They're to see things for serving me. Therefore, I want you to ask Lord Narayan to give the eyes that belong to your guru back. So he went back to Varadraj. And Lord Narayan said, "What boon do you ask?" And he said, "My dear Lord, some time back, my Guru Maharaj gave me very precious possessions of his, but I lost them. So if it is your desire, please return them so I can use them in my Guru Seva." And when he said this, by the mercy of Lord Narayan, he felt such an ecstasy of reciprocation of love. Lord Narayan told him that anyone who is the servant of my servant, like you are, he said, I must reciprocate with their love in every way. And when he said that, Koresh fell unconscious. And when he woke up, he could see his eyes were perfect. And in this way, he utilized his eyes to see the beauty of Krishna and to facilitate his service to Krishna. So through the lives of these great devotees, we can understand practically what it really means to regulate our lives beyond attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. By simply understanding that everything is the property of Krishna and utilizing everything for Krishna's service. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram sutadam sarva bhutanam jatvam amashanti. We can achieve real peace when we are convinced and live by this principle that everything is Krishna's property. My eyes, my ears, my nose, my tongue, my heart, my brain, my whole body, my family, my home, my wealth. All the elements of material nature, gross and subtle, are the property of Krishna. And yukta vairagya means to utilize all these things for the pleasure of Krishna, for the service of Krishna. There is nothing wrong with technology, providing you use it for the right purpose. Just like trees are growing, those trees are spirit souls, and they have a body made of wood, just like you have a body made of blood and flesh and mucus and stool and urine and bile and all these other things. That is what your body is made out of. So a tree has a body made out of wood, but it is alive, and there is a soul in that tree. And if you look at the hoardings in Bombay, you look at the crazy, crazy magazines and books that they are publishing, they are using the bodies of these trees. They are using Krishna's property to make paper, to print things that are completely unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada said, this is the greatest sin. To kill innocent trees, make paper out of it, and utilize that to make counter-propaganda against pious and spiritual life. He said it is the greatest of all sins. But Srila Prabhupada, he was urging us to print millions and millions and millions of books. That means so many trees were being cut down and used for paper to print Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam, so many cantos, Sri Ishopanishad, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, Back to Godhead magazine. So the same printing presses, the same paper companies that are causing such bondage and terrible, terrible illusion in this world, when we use all of those facilities to serve Krishna and glorify Krishna, that is the greatest service. So how do we become above the principles of an attraction and aversion to the senses and their objects? By simply living in such a way that we develop our attraction to Krishna and aversion to Maya. Same principle, but differently placed. And that is what Krishna conscious regulation means. That we regulate our life in such a way that at every moment we are developing attraction to Krishna and aversion to Maya. The spiritual master of Sri Ramanujacharya, the original spiritual master, Jamunacharya, Mahapurna and Gostipurna were actually his godbrothers who took positions because Jamunacharya was his original guru. And Jamunacharya, you know the story how he was a great king for some time, enjoying luxuries of life. But by the mercy of Natha Muni, his grandfather, the association of a Vaishnava, his original bhakti was awakened. And he wrote that famous prayer that I used to be so much attached to the pleasures of this world. And the most prominent pleasure in this world is sex life. He said, now that I have tasted the sweetness of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when I even think of sense gratification, I spit at the thought. My lips curl in distaste. Srila Prabhupada was very fond of quoting this sloka of Jamunacharya. So this is our goal in life, to become so attracted to Krishna. And if you examine the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness, it is all designed to increase our attraction to Krishna and create an aversion to material sense enjoyment. The four regulative principles: no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, is to make us averse to sinful life, to selfish material life. When we chant the holy names, the name of Krishna is none different than Krishna. When we chant the holy names, it awakens within our heart our dormant natural attraction to Krishna. When we hear Srimad Bhagavatam every day, it awakens within our heart our dormant natural attraction to Krishna. When we worship the deities in the temple by either performing the puja personally or just being in the temple room, having the darshan, praying, dancing, chanting, through this process, it is in a very, very sublime and powerful way awakening our natural dormant love and attraction for Krishna. When we eat Krishna's prasad, because that saliva of the Lord is all pure, we were discussing this morning in Srimad Bhagavatam class, it is so pure because it is none different than Krishna, that eating prasad awakens attraction to Krishna. But at the same time, we will not eat things that are not offered to Krishna. We are averse to those things because those things increase material propensities. When we engage in devotional service, whatever it may be, whether it be cleansing the temple, whether it be chanting or dancing, whether it be giving some donation for a proper devotional cause, whether it be making flower garlands,
Just that activity awakens our dormant natural love for Krishna. Krishna is all attractive. When we associate with Krishna, we naturally become attracted to Krishna. And when we associate with Maya, it creates a forgetfulness of that attraction that is meant to be eternally enjoyed by the soul. So the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness must be followed very, very carefully. Raga-desha-vamuktaishtu vishaya-indriyaishtaran atma-vishaya-vadhe-atma-prasadamadigashtu. Because by following these principles, we get Krishna's mercy. And what is Krishna's mercy? That gradually He will attract our hearts to only Him. He will attract our hearts only to the association of those things which are dear to Him. And then the real bliss, the real ecstasy of the soul can be experienced. Where, like Quraysh, or like that pious Brahmin who gave his foot wash to his guru every day to sprinkle on his head, we become completely indifferent to our own physical destiny. We become so much completely absorbed and immersed in giving pleasure and satisfaction to Krishna through the service of guru and the service of the devotees. And of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to teach us the simple method by which we can cleanse our hearts and bring about this pure consciousness. Cheto darapana marajanam bhava mahadevagni nirvapanam sreya khai ravachandrika avataranam vijavadhu jivanam anandam budivaradanam pratipatam punamritashvadanam Sarvatmasna paramparam vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. This verse teaches seven stages in which the heart is gradually cleansed, by which we attain the mercy of the Lord, by which our original pure Krishna consciousness is awakened. And all of these gradual developments of our original consciousness are awakened simply through chanting the holy names of the Lord.
Krishna's name has the power to cleanse all the inebrieties of material attachments. Krishna's name will gradually reveal Krishna. And as Rupa Goswami warns in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, if you want to maintain your material attachments to your body, to your disposition in society, to your family, to anything of this world, then I warn you, you better not go to Keshi Ghat on the bank of Jamuna, because Shyam Sundar, Krishna, is standing there playing on his flute. And if you see him, then you can never be satisfied or attracted to anything else. So does that mean that after we see Krishna, our lips curl in distaste and we start spitting on our mother and spitting on our father and spitting on our teachers and spitting on everything we see, like Jamunacharya? Doesn't mean like that. Spitting means that we have no attachment to trying to exploit these things. In replacement of a desire to exploit all our so-called loved ones and those things of this world, we become the humble servant. When we are attracted to Krishna in compassion and love, we want to give everyone Krishna. We want to give everything Krishna. That is the nature of a lover of God. He wants to share that love with everyone. Material wealth, when we have it, We want to keep as much for ourselves as possible. And even a charitable man will give something, but only to the limit that it doesn't disturb our own wealth. And usually in giving, we're really giving to our own egoistic prestige in the eyes of others. But the wealth of Krishna consciousness, the more you have, the more you want to give it to others. The more you're even willing to risk your very life and everything to give it to others. This is the result of being attracted to Krishna. And therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the only problem in this world is a lack of this attraction to Krishna, the all-attractive. And the only solution to all the problems in this world is to develop our natural love and attraction to Krishna. Krishna has appeared within his name, especially in this age of Kali Yuga, to reveal himself and awaken our natural love for him. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama,
Hare. So at this time we will have kirtan to purify our hearts, absorb our mind and senses in the all-attractive form of Sri Krishna. Let our eyes behold the beauty of Sri Radha Gopinath. And let our ears be immersed in the beautiful sound of the name. And let our tongues very loudly broadcast the glories of the Lord for all the world to hear.